back to Shattering Mist. Having a conversation with both Larry and with Kirk, both members of Yahweh's covenant family, both along with myself having walked away from our religious past, our political past, our patriotic past, so that we could embrace what Yahweh has to say. It is the first requirement of the covenant to walk away from your country. And as Larry began the program by saying, it is the last request that Yahweh makes of us, that we walk away from our country. And, guys, it's interesting that Paul, in his letters, particularly in his letter to the Romans, said exactly the opposite, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Rather than walk away from your country, what did Paul say that we should do?
He said, obey them.
Yes,
obey the Romans.
Yes, submit to them. And when you compare that to the covenant where Yahweh says, walk away from your country, it's the first requirement to participate in the covenant. It's the last statement that Yahusha makes. Walk, you know, come out of her, my people. And you've got Paul devoting the 13th chapter of Romans to this whole diatribe of how, no, God established the government of that country and its rulers, and it's there for you, and you should submit to them. It's for your own good to submit to your country. Stunning, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, OSHA says the exact opposite. He says you set up rulers, but not by me.
Right.
He said, I didn't know them. Yeah. Hard to establish somebody that you didn't know, you know, put them in power if you didn't know them. It's one of the many reasons that somebody should understand that, you know, Bible, which is really based on Babel and Biblia, right, the sun goddess, right, which, and Babel means confusion. It's one of the reasons that Christianity is so confused, because it conflicts with itself. It claims every word is correct, and then you've got Paul, and every word is correct as long as you get Paul out of there and you have the proper translation. Yeah. But once you got Paul in there, he's in opposition all the way through.
You brought up a powerful point. The basis of Babylon is what Hebrew word?
Babel. Confusion.
Yeah, it means to confuse, doesn't it?
Yep.
So, and what is it? And if you were to go to any culture, old, modern, doesn't matter, what are the principal tools of confusion?
Religion and politics. You know, words,
Yeah, the words of religious and political leaders. That is absolutely correct. So I would ask you this question. Of the Roman Catholic hierarchy that are promoting Christmas today. In fact, the Pope had his midnight Christmas mass. Kind of perfect, isn't it?
In the dark. It'll be pretty dark for him.
So I would ask you, of the Christian clerics promoting Christmas today, what percentage of them do you think actually know that Christmas is a pagan religious holiday and that it has really no actual common denominator with anything that God said or did?
The vast majority.
Yeah, I don't think
I talked to a woman who said they actually went through that in their Baptist church.
Right.
And the pastor came out and said he understands it's pagan. He totally agrees. They all agree it's pagan, but we're going to celebrate it anyway.
That's what he said. God doesn't
care because Paul said so. Everything is lawful, according to Paul.
Everything is lawful, yeah, right. Which is, by the way, the opposite of what...
Opposite.
You got to say. Now, the... in fact, Yahweh doesn't even have any laws, so there is no such thing as lawful from his concept. So what you have in Christianity is the clerics being principal deceivers. The clerics almost universally knowing that Christmas and Easter are purely pagan, that there is no authorization for Sunday religious observances, that there is no word, even in their New Testament, related to church. They know that Jesus is wrong. They know that Christ is wrong. And yet they constantly deceive on the basis of those things. What does it make them? I mean, why would anyone go to, pay money to, trust, take their children to, someone who is knowingly and deliberately deceiving in the name of God?
In the early days, though, they had no choice. I mean, Constantine has an army, and he says, you're going to not do this, and you're going to do that. So, but in a free society, so-called, once upon a time, maybe, we have a choice, and we had information, and we had libraries in every town, and there was freedom of information and freedom to, and we still do it.
You know, I was compelled because of the prophecy in Daniel regarding the beast and how the beast that is the most vicious of all institutions began in Babylon and grew out of Babylon and then I grew into Rome and then continued to survive through the Roman Catholic Church. And so I had reason to study the history of Rome. And you mentioned Constantine. There are several myths associated with Constantine that are worth noting. One is that Constantine himself was a vicious, repulsive, violent aggressor whose battles were fought for a singular purpose. Every battle that Constantine fought, including the battle where he became emperor, was fought for a singular purpose. You know what that was?
Make him powerful, make him emperor.
That's correct. That was the only purpose. Constantine fought Romans.
Yeah.
Constantine fought Romans for control of Rome. So that's first. And when Constantine won, he was like Muhammad. He gloated over the bodies of the vanquished. So he would take the highest ranking Romans that he killed, and he would decapitate them and parade about town with their head on a stick. This is a really sick man.
Mm-hmm.
Now the next thing is that there's this notion that Constantine made Christianity the official religion of Rome, and he says now that it's Christianity, you've got to adhere to this religion. He didn't do that. The Edict of Milan does not establish Christianity as the official religion of Rome. It would be Theodosius that would do that about 75 years later. Theodosius is the man who conceived the very feudal system and the tyrannical rule of the Roman Catholic Church over what had been the Empire of Rome. So Imperial Rome became the Roman Catholic Church under Theodosius. He's the one that imposed the religion, and you either agreed with his interpretation of Roman Catholicism, or you were dead. Constantine was a pagan. He worshipped Mithras. He dressed in and celebrated Mithridic holidays all the way to his death. He was buried in Mithridic garments. He wore Mithra's symbols. And this claim that Constantine saw the burning cross, which was a pagan symbol, superimposed on his god, which was the sun, and then heard the claim, under this sign you shall conquer, and that he wrote Rokai on the shields of his soldiers, it's all fabricated. Did not occur. There is no historical reference to it whatsoever. There's no artifact that indicates that anything was drawn with Rokai. And in the first summation of our first reference to this alleged under this sign you shall conquer, the conversion of Constantine, there is no reference to the event at all. And in the second, it's written by Constantine, the Roman Catholicism's chief propagandist. There is this long story of this conversion experience in the second history that was written about it, that completely contradicts the first, and has the event occur at a place where it was impossible, where Constantine had left a year previous. It didn't occur. It's all made up. Constantine, in the Edict of Milan, what Constantine actually did is equated, and this was actually a far more egregious sin, he equated Christianity and Mithraism and all forms of pagan religion. He talked about the worship of any god under any name and prayers to any god under any name, and that they were all be considered acceptable in Rome. It was the amalgamation of all religions is what Constantine promoted.
Which is really Babylonian. I mean, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. It's the amalgamation of a bunch of political and religious schemes all thrown together.
Right.
And that's where we live today, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, Constantine did then authorize the Conference of Nicaea. And the town of Nicaea was named over after Nike, the Greek god of victory. And it was there that the conflict between, over really Christmas, if you will, and Easter, and the name and the nature of the Roman Catholic Christian God was developed. Because it was Constantine's meeting at Nicaea, and we're going to speak about what that means in terms of the Nicolaitans, the reference that Yahushua would later make of them.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yes, it was at the Greek, at the city named after the Greek god of victory, Nike, that Arians was the lead spokesperson in opposition to St. Augustine. I'm going to use the Catholic reference, St. Augustine. And that he said that the Son was begotten. That every reference means that he is that he is part of Yahweh, set apart from him, but that he, by his own testimony and by just reason, cannot be the totality of God. That concept is impossible. You can't create a new, distinct, total God. Welcome back to Shattering Mess, having a conversation with Kirk and with Larry.
Can I interrupt one quick
question? Yeah, people.
I think you should let everybody know that is listening that if you go to Yada Yah in Volume 7, this history of the Roman Empire is there for them to easily start their journey on reading history so they can confirm all this stuff themselves.
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, that's the last two chapters we've posted to Yada Yah. So if you go to yadayah.com, just Yada, which means to know in Hebrew, Yada, Yah, which is short for Yahweh. Yeah, so YADAYAH.com, yadayah.com. You'll find Volume 7, The Last Days, and in it you'll find two chapters. Actually, I think they were cut in half because the chapters were so long. But they're a historical portrait of Babylon, and it compares what Yahweh says in Daniel. I mean, the most sweeping prophecies in all of the Torah prophets and Psalms are found in Daniel. And it's a sweeping portrait of human history from Yahweh's perspective, kind of the history of evil, from Babylon to the Persians to moves from there to the Greeks under Alexander to the Roman Empire to Roman Catholicism through those prophecies, and then you actually switch to, but in that same chapter of Yada Yah, the same volume, then you transition to what Yahweh says about America, even in Yasha Yah 18. You make your way all the way through this material, and what I did is, since Yahweh makes some very condemning comments about Babylon, about Alexander the Great. I mean, he had really intimate detail, like even describing the way that Alexander the Great would die. And then the very nature of Rome. And there's also predictions about where the Taurilist one, known to Christians as the Antichrist, will emerge. And I walk readers through all of the history of Rome, all of the provinces of Rome, the provinces of Greece, the history of Alexander and his conquest. And when you put Yahweh's prophetic portrayal of the history of human evil in context with the actual history of it, it is... it's really enlightening. It's mind-boggling how we have missed so many of these connections that have so poisoned our culture, and how really the country. If you were to take a country today and to say what country is the most complete reincarnation of the Roman Empire, the United States of America. And if you were to take, say, what religion, what, you know, so that's the political institution, what religious institution most marries the Roman Empire? It would be Roman Catholicism. It's powerful stuff, and you can find out why God hates it so much. You know, and particularly we talked about in those chapters, you know, the Hadrians of the world, but then also Constantine and what he did, and ultimately to Theodosius. But there's two things that I wanted to share here. One is that the Council of Nicaea was specifically designed to create the totality of a Christian God, that the Christian God would now be the man. So this man that they chose to name Jesus Christ is, which bears no correlation, and they didn't even have a J at the time, so it'd be Iesus Christus. The individual they chose to name, for them to do that, they had to renounce Arians and to denounce Yahweh and Yahusha and completely differentiate their new God from the actual God, and to make the man that they were creating this caricature of the totality of God, and to establish a new religion around this individual, like the Pope's, you know, midnight mass for Christmas was all about Jesus Christ and the religion that they attribute to him, all of which was conceived at the Council of Nicaea. And that was the place where there's a complete break from the truth to this lie that would now be manifest as Roman Catholicism. And it was at the Council of Nicaea, named after Nike, the Greek god of victory. And so it causes me to think that when Yahusha told the called out at Ephesus that it was good that they had not embraced the council of the Nicolaitans. That's what he was talking about. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It is fairly sobering when you have Yahusha predicting, really, through Yahochanan, things that are going to transpire and that will be associated with different ages of Christendom. And you have in the first of them a condemnation of the very event of the meeting that created the mythos of Christianity. The religion of Christianity was born at the Council of Nicaea, named after the Greek god of victory, Nike. And Nike is the basis of Nicholas. This creed that was conceived at that meeting. And so you really have a Yahusha telling us exactly what would differentiate the truth from the Christian religion, and telling the first community, that in Ephesus, You know, thank goodness you did not buy into this. But, of course, after that, you have the three dominant phases of Roman Catholicism. The first is called the Seat of Satan. The second is married to Jezebel, which means married to Baal, the Lord, Satan. And the third is said to be dead.
Will you forgive me? This was a work day. And okay. I've got to get back to furniture. I'm right in the middle of a move of our studio.
Okay.
But this is fascinating. I wish I could stay, but I need to go. Hopefully I can call tomorrow if that's okay.
That'd be great.
And I appreciate it, and happy Thursday.
Yeah, happy
Kirk,
Thursday.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you, buddy. We'll see you both. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was only very recently that made the connection between Yosha's condemnation as he's going through and talking about all the horrible things that would transpire religiously, talking about the age of what became the Roman Catholic Church and Christianity. Beginning in Ephesus, talking about, in order of things, you know, that they didn't accept the false apostles. And the false apostles were Paul and his posse, Paul and particularly Timothy. And we have total confessions from Paul and from Timothy in their letters that they went to Ephesus to rebuke and oppose Yahochanan and the message that Yahochanan has, and openly, aggressively in opposition of Yahochanan. And here through Yahochanan, Yosha is saying, you know, you held true to the original source of information and did not embrace the false apostles, which would have been Paul and Timothy. And by the way, there's no other viable option other than Paul and Timothy for the role of the false apostles. And then he goes in to say, you did not accept the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which is the Nicene Creed, which grew out of Constantine's creation of Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, they were congratulated for that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's all laid out for us. You can read history, and as opposed to just being bamboozled. You know, if you're bamboozled, then you're going to believe that the purpose of the Nicene Council was to establish the canon of the New Testament and to come up with the Apostles' Creed. And that is not what occurred.
No, not at all. The whole idea there was to separate, they invent a new Roman God and make an amalgamation of a lot of different religions so that they could control everything. And I think anybody who's given it any real thought probably knows that.
That's by the way how Christmas came to be, because there's no other way to celebrate a baby being God unless you can have the totality of God being that baby.
Yeah, and the nativity scene of Babylon and the rest. It was all incorporated in there.
Yeah.
I in the rough and tumble world of FB, I had laid down where it came from. You know, that it's simply a result of the sun impregnating the earth on the pagan holiday of Ashura, Ishtar, Easter, celebrated on the Sunday nearest the vernal equinox, and exactly 9 months later we have the nativity scene. And, you know, I'd laid out some pretty easy and verifiable facts. And I'm getting a lot of thumbs up from family. And suddenly this fellow chimes in. He says, Merry Christmas to you all. Remember that today, while we observe this great Christian day in relative safety, our Christian brothers and sisters who have the misfortune to live among Satan-worshipping Muslims in Africa and in Arabia are being cruelly tortured and murdered. Prayers are in order for them. And remember, too, that it could very well happen here. Real wonderful. And so, you know, I just said to the guy, I said, so you think by participating in a religion that leeches concepts out of Babylon, and you're doing exactly what Yahweh said not to do in opposition to his words, you're somehow pleasing him? No answer.
Yeah.
It's just... it's astounding. I wish that the Christians weren't being slaughtered over there. I would hope nobody would be slaughtered over there, you know, but they're going to be.
Right.
In the end, we'll see over the next 19 years, we will see all kinds of death. This world.
By the way, a lot of it, they brought on themselves. The Jews and the Christians both brought it on themselves. Had rabbis not removed Yahweh's name from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms,
and they actually turned a relationship into a religion, by the way.
Right.
So.
Had they not used my Lord, Adonai, as to replace his name, had they not come up with their Talmud as arguments against the Torah, had they not completely corrupted the prophecies on the Masayah, had they not done those things, then Islam would have been impossible. Islam would not exist. Islam is absolutely dependent upon Yahweh's name being unknown, because no one is going to believe that Allah was the God who inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms when Yahweh says that he has only one name, and a God by any other name is a false God. So the Jews enabled Islam by selling recitals of their Babylonian Talmud to Muhammad and by removing Yahweh's name from his testimony.
Yeah, I always thought that was interesting, by the way, in the Quran where Muhammad says you shouldn't charge the prophet so much.
Right.
the prophet happened to pay for words, you know.
Right, for your recitals. You know, you sell your recitals at a fee, and you ought not charge him that in interest on it. And then he even says, and then after, you know, he uses the recitals, and they laugh at him for having bungled them, he says, and then they change theirs. He's the one to explain the difference between theirs and his. Then they change their. I mean, it's all over the Quran that the basis of Islam. And you know, there's a guy that has a as an author of books on Islam and the correlation between Islam and jihad that happens to be a Catholic. And this particular author. I decided he was going to attack me for being anti-Semitic when I said that Jews bear responsibility for creating Islam and for the hell that Islam has brought on them. And it's a statement of fact. It happens to be the same kind of statement that Yahweh constantly makes of his people, where he says that because they have embraced pagan ideals, because they've copied and emulated the ways of the Gentiles around them, because they have demeaned his name and added to and negated his Torah teaching, that they have brought harm upon themselves. Yahweh says all the time, well, if you look at the history of Islam's formation, it's absolutely obvious, reading the Quran and the Hadith, that Muslims empowered Muhammad to create his religion. And then when the Jews laughed at him for bastardizing the quotes that they had sold him from their Talmud, then he realized that he had to kill them to keep them silent. They had the goods. They could prove that his alleged Quranic revelations from Allah were nothing more than twisted stories from the Talmud. In fact, there are some stories that are absolutely plagiarized word from the Babylonian Talmud. And
you of being anti-Semitic when you're just really anti-Judaism and pro-Semitic. You know,
right.
Very strange, especially coming
strange
from
man.
A Catholic when they've got this long history of, you know, murdering Jews. You know,
yeah, no, it's a very, very, very strange man and a ridiculous argument. Holding people who have a religious and political agenda accountable for what they have done is something Yahweh does all the time. And it is what's interesting to even the term.
He certainly encouraged all his prophets to do it too, didn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
Anti-Semitic. You know, there are people who don't like that term because it's based on Shem, and Arabs would be descendants of Shem as well. It's actually the term anti-Semitic is really from the basis of Shem, which is name. And so to be anti-Semitic, you're opposed to the name. And what is the name? The name is Yahudah. Yeah, Yahudah. And the name is Yahweh. And the people that they'd be opposed to, their name explains that they are related to and they relate to Yahweh. And
right.
So to be anti-Semitic is to be opposed to the name.
The name. And we are pro-name. Very pro-name.
Well,
so
be more pro-name. Yeah, he's just that particular. Very popular author on exposing Islam in his books and his website, and yeah, he's not amongst the most rational people on the planet. But it all really gets right back down to the same thing, and that is that if you don't know his name, you don't know him. And if you're engaged in a religion where your Lord is Jesus, and you call yourself Christian, and you celebrate Christmas, and you go to a church on Sunday, then you are absolutely excluded from heaven. Matter of fact, what does Yahweh say about the prayers of those who are without the Torah?
He says they're an abomination.
Yeah. Yeah, he says, their faces appear to me like dung. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. Larry, while it isn't sufficient alone to know, knowledge and use of Yahweh's name has to be central to a person's approach to God. If you're going to get to know him, if you're going to engage a relationship with him, if you're going to be saved by him, that all has to start with coming to know who he is.
Yes. I mean, you know, he actually says that not only knowing, but loving his name is part of being adopted into the family. That's
now, why do you think he would say loving his name? I mean, it's just a name. How would somebody go about loving a name?
Well, there's a lot of understanding that goes into that name, not just in the pictorial, but as I said earlier, existence. Mm-hmm. Understanding that prophecy is not something he's creating, it's something he's reporting back to this person taking dictation called a prophet, you know, reporting back what he's already seen. There's a lot to it, but there's also the fact that he knew that the people who would disregard and oppose him would remove his name. And for those of us that use his name, we really come to rely on it. And right. to know it and to use it, it acts as a shield for us. It really right. does. I've seen it
right.
in 1,000 debates now.
Yeah, I'd say there's just off the top of my head, I can think of 4 aspects. One is that, you know, we have a switchboard here for GCN. When I see your name or Kirk's name on the switchboard, you know, I smile, I light up. You know, these are guys that I know, that I like, that I enjoy having conversations with, that I look forward to spending eternity with. There is a genuine appreciation and an identity, an association with the name Larry and the voice that you're hearing communicating with us now. And, you know, so I love to see Larry's name and Kirk's name on the switchboard. And so I enjoy seeing Yahweh's name in his testimony, because it's, I know when I see that name, what I'm going to hear is enlightening, it's enriching, it's beneficial, it's dependable, truthful, pertinent. And so when I see Yahweh's name, I know that what I'm going to see around it is appropriate. That's one. The pictorial reference to Yahweh's name is so insightful. You reference that, but that there are... There are 4 elements to it, 2 of which are repeated. And the most important is recognizing that the first letter of Yahweh's name is hand, yod, which was originally yod, and it's the Hebrew word for hand even today. And it was drawn not as a closed fist hand, the kind of hand that you'd be afraid of, the kind of hand that would strike you, the kind of hand you would fear, the hand of a lord that would, you know, would wield power over you. It's an open hand. It's the hand of someone reaching out to you? Like, if you're going to shake someone's hand, do you reach out with your fist?
No.
No, you reach out with your hand open.
If you do that when you're helping someone or greeting someone.
Right. If you're going to lift somebody up, do you reach down with a stub and a closed fist? If somebody's down on the ground, you're trying to pull them up?
Of course not.
Of course not.
No.
No. If you want to walk hand in hand with someone you love, do you reach out a closed fist to them?
No.
No. You reach out an open hand. If you want to touch someone on the cheek or on the shoulder pat them on the shoulder, touch them on the cheek, you know, depending if it's your male, female, what a kind of relationship you have, would you do so with a fist or an open hand?
No, we obviously I was very forthcoming, greeting, right. Lifting up, helping. You know, I
right.
mean, he's
embracing.
This is all positive stuff. That
right.
he's with an open hand.
Open yeah. hand, and it's got the forearm on this hand coming down, the upper arm coming down, and the forearm reaching out with an open hand. That image depicts the image of a Heavenly Father that is approachable, that is welcoming, that is uplifting, that is empowering, that wants to walk side by side, arm in arm, hand in hand, and do things together to embrace
one another.
And
clearly he's lifting up because we have the hay next, and that's as a person standing up, right?
Right.
And his arms are reached up in the air towards his
right.
hand that's coming down.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Reached up and standing, because that's what Yahweh wants. He wants us to stand with him, to walk with him, to engage with him. The last thing he wants is us bowing down to him. I mean, that would be so demeaning. I mean,
that's why he's being called Lord, because God changes his nature. He's
exactly.
not a Lord.
A God that wants to be worshipped isn't worth knowing. Bottom line, that's the God created by mankind.